No, it's Just Plane Radio.
Yeah.
The show devoted exclusively to flying and the aviation lifestyle.
I can fly.
Tame it to the pilot, tame it to the tamer, tame it to the pilot.
Brought to you by JustPlaneRadio.com.
It's your lucky day.
Your aviation resource on the information super skyway.
You got a plane.
Call Just Plane Radio toll-free now at 888-884-2FLY.
And the sky's the limit.
That's 888-884-2359.
Sir, I'd like you to take the helm, please.
I'd be glad to. Greg, your co-pilot. That is me, along with Captain Ed. Wait, no, he's not here. Captain Ke- No, he's not here either. I don't have anybody here with me in the studio. They all left town because of Hurricane Irma. So, you know, we'll have to see where the dust settles here next week. Find out where those guys flew to, either with a plane or just by holding their arms out. I don't know what is going on exactly. But I will manage. You know, I may not be a certified pilot, but I am a perpetual, you know, pilot in training. Okay, we'll go with that for now. Also, later on, Captain Dennis is going to join me. I told you last week that we're going to talk about his little flight, you know, from Minnesota all the way down to Pompano Beach to go scuba diving with me, and then all the way back. And he's going to join us a little later on to talk about that whole journey and what you might pick up from his adventure. However, in the meantime, we're going to catch up with Captain Clay. It's been a while. He's been busy doing things like getting married and things like that. Clay, how you doing, man?
You know, if I were any better, I don't know what I'd say.
Yeah? You would
just it's just going so well.
Well, okay, good. And that's a good thing to hear. You know, I mean, it was a festive occasion.
It was a lot of fun, and I'm just glad to be in the mountains and not on the beach these days.
Yes. Well, I'm hip. Yeah, this Caribbean storm nonsense has been a little bit much, but, you know, we're managing. We'll be okay eventually. All right, so let's just talk about some more positive things. I want to escape from that. I want to talk about being out there with you, because really that's what I was thinking last week. It's like, you know, I need to head out west and get away from this nonsense, and I won't have to deal with any storm stuff, and just go be at one with nature. And that's what you do all the time. You live there in the mountains of Wyoming. Well, Casper, which is close enough, I guess, right?
Yeah, well, we live about 12 miles out of Casper, so it's a rural area.
Yeah.
But, you know, close enough to town that we can get there. But, yeah, it's a lot of fun, and it was great to have you here.
Well, it was. And you've been bugging me for the last year to come out there and see what flying really is. And now that I've seen it firsthand, I got to agree with you.
And didn't get
you.
A chance to go flying.
Well, I flew on the airliner into, you know, that Billings, Montana, I guess.
That never counts.
It doesn't count. I know. But I got to, you know, I hiked to the top of the mountain there in Wyoming, and I got to, you know, look around at it, and I was like, oh my gosh, if I was only in a plane, this would have been awesome.
Or a hang glider.
Hang glider would have been pretty sweet, too. You know, it was funny. I didn't see a whole lot of them, though. I didn't see hang gliders or planes, for that matter, where we were. I guess.
No, they're actually, I think there's a small club that does some hang gliding outside of Buffalo where we were, but
really?
But I haven't seen them in a long time. So
is that something you do too? Is that things that you've partaken in?
No, it's one of those things that I'd like to do, but
yeah.
About the closest I've ever gotten to a hang glider is almost flying into one, flying a tiger moth on the coast of Australia one time years ago, but that's about it.
Wait, almost flying into one?
Yeah.
That sounds like a story that's worth explaining.
Well, you know the Cairns area in Australia. In
right.
Queensland, in far north Queensland. And there between Cairns and Port Douglas, there is an area where a lot of hang gliders congregate.
Okay.
And back then, I don't know if we ever talked about this, but there was a guy, who might still be there, out of the Cairns airport that rented a tiger moth and took people on rides up to that. And a tiger moth is a... is an early 20s, teens, 1900s, obviously, World War I trainer.
Okay. Is that like an open cockpit kind of thing?
Yeah, open cockpit, biplane, yeah. And just a lot of fun. And I think it was, you know, that still to this day holds the record for the best aviation money I ever spent, because I think it was $80 for a half hour or $120 for an hour.
Wow.
And that was Australian, and the exchange rate was like, I don't know, 55% or something like that. Hmm. And so it cost me like, you know, $70.
Sweet.
For an hour.
That was a good day.
Yeah, and he put the stick in the forward cockpit so I could fly. Wouldn't let me take off and land because obviously it was his baby. But
right.
Anyway, it was a good time. But we flew up the coast at like 250, 300 feet, and I remember we ended up having to climb to avoid the hang gliders in front of us at one point.
Okay. But it wasn't that close. You were just saw him like
no, hey. Not yeah, yeah.
Hey, we look out for bird strikes in the USA. What are you got hang gliders here? What the heck, man?
That doesn't look like birds.
Yeah. Sorry. Well, you can't say that, but that's okay. I'll bleep it out in post. That's okay. It's Captain Clay. He can do whatever the heck he wants. All right. So, you know, that sounds like a fun thing. I'll have to add the list. But getting back to Wyoming, I'm going to have to do this. I'm going to have to go out there and fly because the scenery is just spectacular. And I can only imagine it's just that much better from up above. And that's what you've been bugging me about for the last year, right?
At least the last year.
At least.
I mean, the nice thing about flying out here, obviously, when you're flying, you've got regulations about minimum distance that you have to maintain from buildings and from people and this and that and the other. And
when you get out there, there are no people. So
exactly, and there are no buildings. So basically, if you want to, you know, one of my favorite things to do is fly off cliffs. There's some areas out here we can just skim along, you know, 20-30 feet above sort of a sage flat and fly over a cliff, which is sort of cool. And there's all sorts of fun things to do up here.
Okay, so the purpose of that is just you go off the cliff, you don't sink or anything, do you?
No. It's just a cool feeling flying off the end of the flying off the end of the earth. It's pretty neat. It's probably like taking off in Saba or something like that.
Yeah, I bet it would be. Yeah.
Yep.
So that'd be a good way to like practice, at least the way it would look.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So,
but now we've got to get you out here one of these days. There's all sorts. I mean, aside from the sightseeing, the style of flying is a lot different.
Well, you have to avoid mountains.
Well, yeah, you got to avoid the cumulus granitus, as they say. But but it's just an entirely different style of flying.
Yeah. Do you get a lot of because of the mountains and the wind currents and stuff, do you have to take that stuff into account quite a bit or not so much?
Oh, very much so, yeah.
Yeah.
If you're flying, you know, from here to Salt Lake, for instance, you've got the Wasatch Range that you've got to cross, and those go up to close to 14,000 feet, and you get primarily westerlies coming off there, so you can get, you know, really good down currents on the leeward side of the mountains. Mm. So you've got to plan for that, cross ridges at, you know, 45-degree angles so you don't get caught in a down current that you can't get out of, all sorts of, different mountain flying tips and tricks that you got to keep in mind.
Got it. Now, the place that we were hanging out for your wedding was it's like a hunting ski lodge kind of thing, I guess?
Yeah, they do, sort of a semi-dude ranch in the summer, a lodge, and then they do, they cater to hunters in the hunting season, you know, September, October into November. And
now, could have you flown your plane into that area right there where we were?
Yeah, Buffalo actually has a really nice airport.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's where I go for cheap fuel. So,
well, one of the people that were there, I was talking to them, they rebuild, Super Cubs or build them. And they had just got back from Air Venture and they came out of the wedding. I was talking to him. I was like, dude, why didn't you fly your Super Cub into this place right here? And he's like, well, I want to sell it. And
before he bends it.
Exactly. So I totally understood where he's coming from there. But I was like, wow, this would be like Super Cub country, wouldn't it?
Yeah, pretty much.
What are the rules about being able to fly a plane like that into, you know, some open savanna? I mean, because we're in a national park. Can you even do that? Or they go, hey, no.
We were in a national forest, which is different than a national park for regulations. And I'm sure that they're I don't offhand know what the rules for landing in national forest are, as most of Wyoming, a significant portion of it, is either BLM, Bureau of Land Management land, or, you know, it could be state land. Some of it's private, but not all that much. So
yeah,
I'm pretty sure that you can, you know, if you can land it safely, you can land it as long as it's not on private land.
Hmm. So. Well, you could always do it, and then by the time they realize you did it, you're gone. I would imagine too.
What are they going to do?
They got to catch
your end numbers and.
Well, that's true. I guess they can do that kind of stuff. They got those security cameras all over the place, probably even in the parks now. I would imagine going on in a plane like that. Whether it's your plane or a Super Cub and going around looking for moose, because that's what they said that they had roaming the property is that you could see a moose. We don't really see any bear, even though they have, you know, bears in the area, I guess. There's signs and stuff. But they said, yeah, we see a moose every once in a while. But we didn't see any. But I bet if we would have flown, we would have seen a moose. Have you ever seen a moose flying around Wyoming or what?
I don't know that I've ever seen one from the air, but then I haven't been really looking. I've seen plenty from the ground, though.
Yeah. I mean, do you, when you're flying, do you see bears and things like that around there or what?
Oh, no. You see deer. You see elk. Bears are probably more in the trees, so you're probably not going to see them when you're in the air. But yeah. A lot of antelope. You know,
a lot of antelope stuff. Actually, I saw a lot of antelope on my way back to the airport to Billings, Montana. There was like five or six along the side of the road because we got up early and overnight. You can't see those things when they run out in front of the cars or semi trucks. There was a few of them on the road. You know what I'm saying? Some people were calling their insurance company. But that just goes to show you're in a cool wilderness area.
Just Plain Radio, the show devoted exclusively to flying and the aviation lifestyle. Imagine traveling twice as fast as you can drive. Imagine taking friends and family snorkeling, surfing, skiing, shopping, and more to exotic destinations. Imagine attending business meetings in cities far away and still making it home at night. Or just imagine exploring the wild blue yonder.
Quit dreaming about it and get to it. There has never been a better time to become a private pilot, and flight training professionals in Orlando will show you how. Flight Training Professionals in Orlando is your full-service flight school. A state-of-the-art flight simulator, a fleet of the latest Cessna aircraft, and a staff of full-time seasoned flight instructors are just a few of the many reasons Flight Training Professionals in Orlando is the place to start your aviation adventure. Call 407-896-0077. That's 407-896-0077. Or go to ftpros.com. That's ftpros.com.
Whether you're a flight student, an experienced pilot, or simply an aviation enthusiast, there is a place for you as a member of the Aircraft Owners and Pilots Association. Join AOPA to get the latest general aviation news, safety resources, and technical support you need to sharpen your skills and become a central part of the nation's vibrant general aviation community. Learn more about becoming a member at AOPA.org. That's AOPA.org.
As pilots, it's all about the journey. But sometimes situations arise that can turn an adventure into a nightmare. Do what divers do. Join DAN, Divers Alert Network. The many benefits of a DAN membership go way beyond water activities. As a DAN member, you automatically receive DAN Travel Assist and up to $100,000 of evacuation assistance coverage. This applies to both diving and non-diving medical emergencies. Dive into DAN.org for details. DAN, your Dive Safety Association.
With Just Plain Radio, the show devoted exclusively to flying and the aviation lifestyle.
They always listen to the tower. They never question the authority of the tower.
Well, the tower's telling us to hold.
Well, so what about that? Just once, I want to hear,
the tower's telling us to hold, but you might notice I'm rumbling along the grass. If you look out the right, you'll see all those aircraft lined up on the runway. The tower keeps telling us we're number 19 for takeoff. I say we're number one. What's the tower going to do? Hey, you! You can't intimidate that type of behavior!
You're right, I shouldn't have done that. No, I should have listened better. If you need me, I'll be up in the clouds.
You must be a pilot to know that move.
You can really fly. And while you're up there, turn around and touch the sky. I guess the point of getting out is never saying goodbye.
This is Just Plain Radio. Greg, your co-pilot, that's me. Captain Clay helping me out right now as we navigate. Well, not the latest aviation news and information. We're just talking about Clay's stuff. You know, flying out in the mountains of Wyoming and, you know, his Piper Saratoga. I mean, have you been up in the air lately or you been too busy getting hitched? What do you think there, Clay?
You know, I somehow the summer seems to have gotten away from me. I had some a few mechanical issues earlier in the summer, and those seem to be dealt with. Now I've got a horizontal situation indicator, an HSI, that needs to be replaced. But even with that, I haven't had much time.
Yeah. Well, you have been pretty occupied with that whole marriage thing. So
yeah. You know, and we're just getting used to the whole idea. I mean, we've been together for 13 years, so
right.
this is a big shock to us, as you can imagine. You know, complete
right.
change of lifestyle.
Well, despite that, it was a big event, and a lot of planning went into it. I mean, you had to show up, and she did everything else, right?
Pretty much.
Yeah.
That's how it worked.
That's a lot of work for
Yeah, I think it was. I think it was more work on your part than it was on mine.
Well, I don't know about that. We just went and played with your toys. I mean, he had these like four-wheel ATV things. We're cruising around on that. We're hiking. We're, horseback riding, just having an awesome time. The only thing missing was a plane. I got to come back out there. We're going to have to plan a excursion out there, because I told Ed and Keith about this last week. I said, oh my gosh, we have got to go out there and visit Clay and, fly a plane out there or whatever and go flying around the mountains and stuff. And they were like, okay, I'm in. They both said yes. So we just got to figure out how we can bring everybody together out there. And
that would be cool. Bring like a 182 or something out, and we could take that in the Saratoga. And you could bring your wife, who I had the pleasure of meeting.
That's right. She does exist. I proved it to Clay out there in Wyoming. So,
well, yeah. I think I saw her. Or like her headshot in the catalog somewhere. Some like actors.
Yeah, it was like a Russian thing.
Yeah, Russian ride thing.
Yeah, you just got to pay, for a certain period of time. That's all you do. But it worked out.
So
worked
5 days. I mean, that had to be expensive.
It was big money.
I appreciate that.
It was actually buy four get one free. So it wasn't too bad for me.
So we'll have to compare versions that people have met over the years.
Right. Right. But I can tell you right now, she will not come out with me if we fly a plane, because she knows I might be at the controls, despite the fact that Keith and Ed might be there too. If she thinks any chance in hell that I'll be at the controls, she won't fly. She's already said that. She won't fly with me. So
that's the person that knows you best, too. So
yeah, well,
what does this tell you?
It just tells me that she has no taste when it comes to great pilots. But she's, she does okay. We'll figure something out. Maybe I'll blindfold her and just kidnap her, throw her in the plane like cargo.
There you go.
Yeah, that'll work. Anyway, so we'll work on that. But what about your plane? You say it's down right now. Are you going to get that fixed pretty quick or what?
Yeah, mechanically it's fine. I've just got a radio issue that I'm dealing with, replacing that HSI. So
happened? How did it fail? What do you mean?
You know, it failed, and then they fixed it, and the other part failed because of the initial failure was misdiagnosed by Bendix King. So it was going to be like some ridiculous amount of money, $5,000 or $6,000 to fix the old one that I have in there. So I was like, well, if you're going to spend that amount of money, you might as well do an upgrade.
Ah, so you're getting a new one.
Yeah, but I've got to fly down to Savannah at the end of September, early October, with my mom and bring her back down there.
Yeah,
and then return here. So the flying season starts then.
Okay, all right. Well, Captain Dennis flew down to Pompano Beach to go scuba diving with me for lobster. He didn't catch any lobster, but it didn't really matter. We had a good dive, but he flew all the way from Minnesota down to Pompano Beach and back in 2 days. It was like a 9 to 10 hour flight each way.
That's hard to do. I've done that a couple times, and it's really tiring.
Yeah. Well, he had his son, who's a certified pilot, with him too, Austin. And so it was kind of like, they tag-teamed all the work and stuff. But they were like ready to go when I saw them on the dive boat. I thought they'd be exhausted. But they did have a little issue when they landed in Pompano Beach about 1 o'clock or I don't know. It was just after midnight because the airport was kind of shut down. So they landed the plane, no problem. There wasn't really anyone there. And they parked the plane, kind of figured out where they needed to park. But when they wanted to leave the airport to go to the hotel, they were locked in to the airport. And so they had no way to get out. They couldn't get out of the airport, and they had to call, like, a sheriff or something. So we're going to get to the lowdown on that here in just a bit. He's going to join us.
That happened to me once.
That did happen to you. I mean,
really,
what is the deal? He said he didn't know the code, like, for the gate, to open up the gate to let the Uber driver in to pick him up.
Yep.
And they did finally figure it out. literally guessing by using runway numbers. Is that standard protocol, or do you know?
Yeah, you know, normally it's runway numbers or maybe the ATIS code or, you know, something like that.
But where do you get that information?
Well, if you're a pilot, then you'll know the ATIS code because you can look it up on...
I know, but how would you know that would be the code they use for the gate? Is that just like what they do at a lot of those small airports?
Yeah, a lot of the small airports use the same methodology. But sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't.
Okay, but, so you'd have to do a little educated guessing, ATIS number or runway numbers or something like that.
Yep.
Or 1234 or a password.
Yeah, that probably works like 75% of the time.
Yeah, okay. Well, I just thought that was really interesting.
Our highly secure aviation infrastructure.
Exactly. Where's Homeland Security? Oh, we don't. Just use the runway numbers. You'll be good.
Well, my local airport, it's really impressive because we were assigned cards that we have to use, and we got to swipe them when we go in, and then they assigned us with a discrete code that you've got that's programmed with your card. So you pull up to a gate, you got to swipe the card, and then you've got to put in your code. And they did that so that they knew at all times exactly who was on the airport.
Well, that would make a little more sense, yeah.
It makes perfect sense until you realize that you don't have to swipe it when you leave. You just pull up and park on a pressure pad, and the gate opens, and you leave. So at this point, pretty much everybody is on the airport. Nobody is registered as leaving.
Okay.
So go figure that out.
Yeah. They're going to have to work on that. You know, I don't know. That seems a little strange to me, but there should be an app for that. You know, I need to get out of the airport. Where's my app? Oh, yeah. Just press the button, use your fingerprint, whatever. All right. Well, Clay, I'll let you get back to business and fixing your plane. We'll talk again soon, my friend, okay?
Sounds like a plan. I appreciate it, Greg. Good to talk to you as always.
We got Captain Dennis up next. Stay close to Just Plane Radio.
Just Plane Radio, the show devoted exclusively to flying and the aviation lifestyle.
Been up around the stratosphere at 31,000 feet. I'm gonna fly on out of here on wings that you can't see. If you're gonna fly high without fear, you're gonna have to learn to love the atmosphere, and you gotta learn to use those wings you can't see.
This is Just Plane Radio. Greg, your co-pilot, that is me. And I'm now joined by Captain Dennis, who put on some serious miles on his Mooney 201 as he flew down to dive with me in Pompano Beach. Dennis, how are you, man?
Oh, I'm feeling much better now after spending 19 hours in the seat.
Yeah, are you jet-lagged? Well, I guess you aren't because you didn't change time zones, did you?
I did, actually. Went from Central to Eastern.
Okay. So, let's see.
It's only 1 hour. We made up for it.
You made up for it, yeah, and you've adjusted. You were flying on adrenaline, I think.
Honestly, I believe I was, because I never felt tired the entire weekend, and we got in really late Saturday night.
Yes, I alluded to that earlier, and we got to, you know, dive into this a little deeper and find out exactly what happened when you arrived in Pompano. But before we get into that, I just want to talk about how I was surprised how energetic you were when I saw you on the boat the next day, because I knew you didn't have much sleep. You've been flying all day the day before, but you were on the dive boat. You were ready to go. We had a great afternoon of diving and just hung out and stuff. And then you had to get up early and go and fly all the way back. And it took a little bit longer on the way back. Is that right?
Yeah, it took actually added about an extra hour coming back. We were pushing some pretty bad headwinds once we got into northern Missouri and Iowa. We were seeing ground speeds down to 90 knots, which for an airplane that trues out at 165, that's a bit of a headwind.
That makes quite a bit of difference far as speed and all that kind of stuff. I can understand that.
The good news, we're still going faster than cars on the ground, so I had that going for me.
Well, that's true. And, you know, but once again, you were kind of flying on adrenaline. You were just so pumped up about doing this. I know the one thing you said to me on the dive boat was you were surprised how perfect the flight had went so far. All the way down from Minnesota down to Pompano Beach, Florida. 10 hours in the plane almost. And you said, hey, it was like non-eventful. It went almost exactly to plan, right?
Yeah, it really did. I mean, we looked at the weather first thing in the morning and made an adjustment by 4 hours and dodged everything. It was perfect.
Well, it wasn't perfect, according to Captain Keith. We'll address that here after the break with Captain Dennis. Find out why it wasn't perfect next on Just Plane Radio.
Just Plane Radio, the show devoted exclusively to flying and the aviation lifestyle.
Just Plane Radio, the show devoted exclusively to flying and the aviation lifestyle.
I can never be with someone who likes Joni Mitchell. It's Cloud's Illusions, I recall. I really don't know Clouds at all.
What does that mean? Is she a pilot? Is she taking flying lessons? It must be a metaphor for something, but I don't know what it is.
I just want to fly. I come burning in the sky up so high. Put your arms around me, baby. Put your arms around me, baby.
This is Just Plane Radio. Greg, your co-pilot. That's me, along with Captain Dennis. We're talking about his flight to and from Minnesota to Pompano Beach and back. All right, so Dennis, you know, you said it went perfect, but last week I mentioned this to Captain Keith. He said there is no such thing as a perfect flight. And I was like, well, what do you mean? I mean, it went exactly how he planned it out. He goes, no, it was not perfect. And I'm like, oh, okay, so what you're saying that perfect is never achieved if you're, you know, if you're a true pilot in training, you're always learning, and being perfect is never fully achieved. So do you agree with that way of thinking, or do you think you're...
You know, if he wants to nitpick it.
Yes, yeah, that's what I said. You're come on, give him a break. Give him perfect. It went, I told him, okay, maybe it wasn't perfect, but it went exactly according to plan, and yes. It doesn't get much better than that.
No, when you're taking a look at a flight that's going to take you, you know, 12 hours from the time you decide to get out to the airport to the time you get out of the plane, and you're looking at the amount of territory you're covering and the amount of possible weather systems you could be going through, and to manage to get to, you know, your first fuel stop on time, and there's a great restaurant next door to get something to eat, and then you continue on to your second fuel stop, and you get there just 5 minutes after the thunderstorm pushed out of the airport, and you were able to make a perfect visual landing instead of having to deal with a thunderstorm, and then having a beautiful night flight over the ocean, cutting the corner across the northern panhandle of Florida into Pompano, I think I did okay.
Yeah, I think you did too. And you know, I think, you know, the thing that he's talking about, I appreciate, I understand. But, you know, you had a lot to deal with because you were, you know, this was over the Labor Day weekend. And you had Hurricane Harvey, who was at that particular time had just moved up through the middle of the United States, and you had to cross through that nonsense.
Well, he was actually more or less out of my way. He was over on the very eastern side of Kentucky and really had very minimal impact. If anything, I might have picked up a little tailwind from him, but it wasn't much.
Well, yeah, but it swung through, and so the remnants were still there to kind of dodge through. And there was some, you know, initially you were planning to come down on Saturday. You had to push it all back to flying all the way down on Sunday. You were going to break it up a little bit. But you made that choice, and you did your flight path, and it worked out okay. So let's go through this. So from Minnesota, you went from there to there. You know, where were your stops?
So we stopped first in Cape Girardeau, Missouri, which is down in the south, be southeast corner near Paducah, Kentucky. Mm-hmm. So we stopped there. It just seemed really convenient, and as it turns out, they have got a great restaurant on the field.
Huh.
So highly recommend a shout out to Sandy's Place. If anybody's looking for a great $100 hamburger or a good country fried steak, I can attest it was delicious.
You can vouch for them, huh? So what, that was your lunch stop?
That was our lunch, you know, late supper, what, or early supper, late lunch, whatever, because we got there at about 3 in the afternoon, and you know, then didn't get back in the air until about 5. Yeah.
Uh-huh. Okay. So you did that, you gassed up, and you went from there to where?
To Tallahassee. That was our next stop. So we came down through Alabama and straight into Tallahassee and landed at the airport there close to, I think, 10:30 at night. We had just missed the thunderstorm. It had just pushed off, and all of the storms that had been going through that area all kind of dissipated and broke off and got out of the way. So we had a unobstructed flight then from Tallahassee then into Pompano.
Okay. Now, wait a minute. From that second leg was how long then? Like, that had to have been like 5 hours, wasn't it? Thereabouts?
Just over three and a half to 4 hours, something like that.
Yeah. So it was anybody screaming in the plane like, miles. Hey, I got to go?
No, not on the way down. Everybody had was just fine. Austin and I were splitting piloting duties up front, and he was, you know, right there being a perfect co-pilot, kind of anticipating my needs and, you know, dialing up the next frequency when we get handed off to center or to approach controller somewhere.
Right.
Or looking at the airports around us, making sure, you know, where are we, what's down there. And
yeah,
it was really nice having that. My daughter was having a great time in the back. She had an iPad with her to see where she was stretched out across the back seat, taking up both seats, and just generally having a great time.
Yeah, yeah. She was basically the passenger in command.
Correct.
And she told me that, yeah, her job was to make sure the back seat was as comfortable as it possibly could be for a passenger of her size and stature.
Yes, and so, I think mission was definitely accomplished there. She had the in-flight pillows and a couple of airline blankets back there and was stretched out and napped probably half the flight.
Yeah, so neither one of the kids said, hey, Dad, I got to go. Where are we going to stop? None of that happened, huh?
No, not on the way down.
Did you have the... Oh, okay, but on the way back, it's a different story. We'll get to that in just a bit. Yeah. So you went from Tallahassee, and then you checked in with me, and I told you, hey, look, diving looks good. We're definitely going to go down to Pompano and head down there tonight, so why don't you just go ahead and fly straight from Tallahassee all the way down to Pompano as opposed to Orlando. And so that's what you did. So that was another probably pushing four-hour flight, wasn't it?
No, two and a half.
Two and a half, that's
from
all.
Two and a half. It would have been only an hour, just over an hour from Tallahassee to Orlando. But as you said, you can come to Orlando, but I'm not going to be here.
Yeah.
So
we hopped in the truck and drove down from Orlando to Pompano to meet him there Sunday morning at the dive boat. But that was the plan. But what happened? You got a little delayed in Tallahassee because of the storm, or what happened?
No, we just, we landed in Tallahassee just after the storm passed. So we just did, you know, more or less a quick turn there, got some bathroom breaks and sodas, and got back in the plane and just headed down the last 2.5 hours.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, by now it's, 11 o'clock at night, and the time zone changed. And so, yeah, it was after 1 a.m. when we finally touched down at Pompano.
All right. And you touched down at Pompano Beach Airport. And what are the call sign? What's the call sign for that one?
Papa, Mike, Papa. It's the Pompano Beach Air Park.
Okay. All right. So you did that, but you realized the airport is closed.
Well, so it's unattended after like 10 to 11 o'clock at night. It seems like all the FBOs are shut down. The tower's gone home.
Right.
And as it turns out, they also have a full perimeter fence at this airport.
Yeah. There's... Now, I was talking to Clay about that earlier because I mentioned you had an issue when you landed in Pompano, not about landing, which, you know, you just fly in as like a non-towered airport, right?
Yep.
You just have to watch the, you know, traffic and know what's going on in that regard, and you land your plane, and then you figured out where you needed to park just by looking at all the information you had, you know, on your iPad and stuff and directions. But once you got situated, you didn't know how to, you couldn't get out of the friggin' airport because they had it all shut down, and there was a gate that you had to punch in a key code.
And the problem was the key code puncher thing was on the other side. So on the inside of the airport, there was no option for us to punch a code into the gate, no button to push to get out, nothing.
Yeah.
We were stuck. So we called Uber
and
had a guy, you know, the Uber driver shows up, and I was like, is there anything on there, like, you know, push this number to call somebody? No, it's just a keypad.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, okay. So we started trying a bunch of things that we thought it might be, and nothing. So I actually resorted to calling the Broward County Sheriff, and they were going to send somebody out, and half hour later, still nothing. So we finally just decided to keep trying certain combinations, and finally we found one that made sense, and it worked. And so at 2:30 in the morning, the gate finally swung open and let us out.
Well, I told Clay, I said, well, you know, you know, it ended up being some kind of runway number or something. I don't know. He didn't really say which one it was, but Clay said that's fairly common.
It's either it is.
Like a runway or a, what was the other thing he said?
The tower frequency.
Yeah, the ATIS frequency. ATIS
frequency,
right.
Yeah. We tried a bunch of the things. It's just at 1 o'clock in the morning, we probably just weren't thinking that straight.
You would think that'd be like a four-flight thing they could add on there.
You would hope, you know, in the facility directory. I mean,
yeah,
I go to small airports, and they usually have, you know, a little keypad by the door or something to get into the building.
Yeah.
And they'll actually write right on there, you know. what's the emergency frequency or the tower frequency or, you know, something like that. And just no problem. But
or, you know, here's an emergency number to call and they can give it to you. You know, yeah, that seemed a bit strange to me. But I don't know. Clay said that's fairly common. He's dealt with that many times before, but he usually can figure it out, which doesn't say a whole lot for security. But whatever. You know, what are you going
to
do?
But I talked to the guys at Shelter the next day, and he said, yeah, that we've been complaining about that for a while. But, you know, it's not a problem if you got a car. You can just drive out because they have a sensor that picks up a car. But, you know, I'm not quite that big yet, so had to look for other options.
Understood. Yeah, well, your plane's not big enough to fly a car, is that what you're saying?
No, I'm not quite as big as a car to be able to trigger the sensor for the gate. It's a fat joke.
We'll go with either one. All right, look, we'll find out what the issue was going back as far as bathroom stops and then some. There was some weather that played a factor in his trip. That's coming up on Just Plane Radio.
Just Plane Radio, the show devoted exclusively to flying and the aviation lifestyle.
Be an explorer in the other two-thirds of your world. Be the buddy who takes the kids in the aquarium instead of just to it. Be adventurous. Be amazed. Be a diver.
For nearly 75 years, the Aircraft Owners and Pilots Association has been a beacon for those who cherish the freedom to fly. AOPA protects your rights as a pilot by fighting airspace restrictions, fuel taxes, user fees, airport closings, and other issues that threaten your ability to take to the sky. AOPA is on the front lines every day to ensure that general aviation and the interests of its members are promoted and safeguarded. Learn more about how you can become a member at AOPA.org.
Are you physically fit enough to scuba dive? I'm Greg the Dive Master, and I'll share a few ways to know for sure next.
This scuba tip is brought to you by DAN, Divers Alert Network. DAN helps divers in need of medical emergency assistance with the DAN hotline and is the most recognized and trusted organization worldwide in the fields of dive safety and emergency services, health, research, and education. Join DAN today by going to DAN.org. DAN, your dive safety association.
You should check with your physician before starting a new activity and know you're ready for the physical fitness requirements for diving. Here's just one real-world activity test to consider. 1. Walk on land for 100 feet in your scuba gear. 2. Ascend a 5-foot vertical ladder from the water in same gear. And 3. Swim underwater in gear at half a knot for 30 minutes and just over double that for 3 minutes. Dive into dan.org for more info and to Scuba Radio to get the urge to submerge. Scuba Radio.
Takeoff with Just Plane Radio, the show devoted exclusively to flying and the aviation lifestyle.
I'm getting pretty good. Just trying to figure out these landings.
Increase altitude.
It always says it. No, I'm trying to land.
Terrain alert.
I know there's terrain. I'm trying to land on the terrain.
Terrain alert. Pull up.
I will not. I am my own person.
Pull up. Terrain alert. Pull up. Terrain alert.
Damn it.
Landing unsuccessful.
Yeah, I saw you, freaking dog!
This is Just Plane Radio. Greg, your co-pilot. That is me, along with Captain Dennis today. All right, we're talking about his trip from Minnesota to Pompano Beach, Florida, and back. Coming down was fine. It went perfect, according to him, or as best as he could have planned it, according to Captain Keith, because there's no such thing as a perfect flight, according to Keith. But, you know, you can take your pick as far as that's concerned. If it goes how you planned it, I think that's pretty perfect in my book. But I hear, you know, there's no such thing as a perfect flight. There's always something that you could have done a little bit better, you know, grease the landing, something like that, a little better than that kind of thing. And by the way, all those went pretty well.
I would say.
All six of them.
All six of them. You're happy because they were successful. Yep. So
they were actually pretty smooth.
Yeah. All right. Cool. Well, that's good. And that's good for the plane, too. All right,
exactly. So as long as you can keep using it as soon as you land, it's a good landing.
Yeah. Right? So, and it worked really well, and you got down there. We had some fun diving, and then, you know, the next morning you had to get up and early and head back out and fly all the way back to Minnesota. And it was a long trek, I knew, but pretty much everything went pretty well until, what, like the last hour? Is that what you were telling me before, or what?
Yeah, I'd say the last 2 hours was probably... Well, the last hour was actually really interesting as we got close to the Minneapolis area. But we did run into a little area of weather just north of St. Louis. They were getting some pretty strong storms coming in. Mm-hmm. We were catching it right as it was building, so we kind of went in through some little rain showers that were starting to build up. But just north of that, though, was the smoke from all the fires in Oregon. And so we actually were in solid IFR conditions for nearly an hour at 8,000 feet because the smoke was so thick you couldn't see anything ahead of you. It
really?
It even blocked out the sun. It was like flying around, you know, just at, you know, in the evening.
Really? So, I mean, did the tower tell you it was going to be like that? Did you know? Or did you just kind of get into it and go,
I saw that there was a SIGMET about it.
Yeah.
And I didn't really worry. I mean, I've got the autopilot on. I'm instrument rated. I could use the time. You know, why not? But as I was talking to air traffic control, I gave them a pilot report on that. And they said, yeah, if you would have dropped down to 7,000, you would have been just out of it. But
yeah, but
know,
thanks for it, telling us, telling me that now, you big dummy.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. All right. So you had to fly through the soup of these forest fires for a while. And then you popped into Minneapolis airspace and the weather
was... Yeah, just south of Minneapolis, we were starting to get advisories that there was some weather building up near our destination, and they offered to route us since we were, you know, obviously heading direct, and they advised that we go west of course and then track north, and we would miss some of the larger, heavier rain.
Mm-hmm.
And it worked out really well. My hat's off to the air traffic controllers. They did a wonderful job of getting us to the destination in between the storm cells. We, you know, just hit a couple spots with some rain and some bumps, but we were able to kind of thread a gap between two large thunderstorms and get in and around on the backside of them and land.
Now, was that something you could just see out the window, or were you tracking the weather in your plane as well?
I was tracking it on the ADS-B, but even, you know, where they're building that out, but it's still kind of spotty. When we really needed the coverage as we were heading into this, we had no ground services. And so it was really kind of disappointing. And it wasn't until we got closer in to Minneapolis, where we were already in the thick of this, that the radar started to come up. It was like, well, thanks. But fortunately, air traffic control was able to steer us through a really nice hole, and they had another Cessna Citation that they were guiding through the same spot just a couple thousand feet above us. And so we both kind of threaded that little gap and got into the airport. But it was really bizarre because we were fighting some really, really strong winds, and then that thunderstorm rolled through, and on the backside of it, it had gone to dead calm. Just a half hour earlier, the airport was north winds at 17 gusting 25.
Oof.
And when we landed, they had changed runways and it was calm and just made a really easy landing.
Interesting. So, yeah. I mean, when it was gusting like that, would have you had to divert if it would have been?
No,
there?
I would have just landed on the north south runway. I mean, 17 gusting 24 straight up and down the runway is really not a big deal. Just
You
know, carry a few extra knots. We landed in almost the same thing down in Cape Girardeau for the previous fuel stop. So.
All right. Well, supposedly you had a bathroom issue with one of your passengers on the way back.
Yeah, on the first leg.
First
leg.
Despite,
going from Minneapolis from Pompano to Tallahassee, about an hour into the flight, my co-pilot expressed concerns, and despite making sure that he used the bathroom before he left, so. I don't know what, I think he slammed two waters or something like that, and they kind of caught up to him. But we got into Tallahassee, and as soon as we pulled off the ramp, we opened the door. He jumped out and ran to the building, and I took a right to go to the self-service pump and start fueling us up.
Interesting. Okay, so you didn't have the Little John on board, or he just didn't want to use it?
I didn't bring a Little John.
You didn't bring one? Are you kidding? Wow. So you didn't have any emergency backup plan? In case you guys couldn't have landed?
What would you say? We could have always
Austin,
landed.
Austin, out the window.
Well, he was considering, you know, if it got much worse, he was going to quick slam one of the water bottles we had. But I really didn't want him doing that. And I'm sure he didn't want to do that with his sister in the back of the seat either. So
yeah, I'm sure she wouldn't appreciated that too much. But
some things should be kept private.
Understood. Well, are you going to get a Little John for the next trip just in case? That seems like something you'd have to have in the plane, I would think.
I think it's going to be a Christmas present.
Ah, you think so? From who to who, though?
From Santa.
Oh, I gotcha. Understood. Hey, yeah. You remember that trip? Well, here, we'll never let that happen again. Love, Santa.
Right.
I got it. Well, that sounds like it was a fun trip. It was great seeing you, Dennis. Next time I want to fly with you, though, okay?
The offer's always open.
Okay, we'll make it happen. We're going to fly down to the Caribbean. Now that he's done his shakedown flight, it's time for some real fun. And on that note, we'll end it. Till next time, remember, there is no better high
than learning to fly.
Just Plane Radio is brought to you by JustPlaneRadio.com.
I say we take off and nuke the entire site from orbit.
Your aviation resource on the information super skyway.
It's the only way to be sure.
Just Plane Radio is a production of Overboard Entertainment Incorporated.
But just plain wrong.
Remember, you can listen live or to archives of past shows worldwide over the internet at JustPlaneRadio.com.
I'm going to leave my people up to the radio tower.
So tell a friend and take off every week with Just Plane Radio.
And I'm going to make a call.
The show devoted exclusively to flying and the aviation lifestyle.
Listen up, everybody. I have some news.
The opinions you just heard on Just Plane Radio are those of the hosts, callers, and guests.
We are screwed.
They are not necessarily those of any station or network, its management, or advertisers.
A little too far, cross the line.
There are many factors to consider before learning to fly.
What is your problem?
So make sure you do your own research and get the proper instruction before your exploration into aviation.
Thank you very much, sir.
Have any questions or comments? Feel free to do so via the web at JustPlaneRadio.com.